Happy New Year's Eve, comic book fans around the world. With resolutions abound, we here on the Contest of Champions resolve to provide you with the greatest comic book podcast this world has ever seen. How'd you like that?
That was better. That was better.
That's okay. This week's Dirty Dan disclaimer, or the Triple D, reads as follows. This episode of the COC may contain premature drunkenness. With Dirty Mouth Dan missing from the show last week, our disclaimer was all for naught. This week, however, it is important that everyone know that the COC podcast may not be suited for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. It's a really good thing, though, that this podcast is audio only, because in the spirit of New Year, Dan's decided to don only a diaper in his best attempt at a baby New Year homage.
Let's get ready to rumble!
That's gross. Well, season's greetings, friends, and welcome to a brand new season of the COC. This is season 3 of our live version of the show and our 52nd episode. Here on the COC, it is our goal to look at everything in the comic book world from superhero fights to our opinions on the best stories out there. So feel free to contact us and let us know what you think, or even better, tell us what you'd like to hear us discuss.
To welcome this week's guests, I'm going to do something that will probably get me in some trouble. I'm going to disclose all of our guests' secret New Year's Eve resolutions.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So let's start with Speech. We'll start with Infinite Speech. Our pal Speech has decided that he's getting too old and that he needs to give up masquerading around New York City as the breakdance fighting vigilante Special G.
That's a good one to give up.
Yeah, it's a good one to give up. Yeah. Next up is our buddy Spider-Man Geek. He's promised his wife that he's going to stop stealing her bras and showing them to random people on the bus on the way to work. Dan, you think you can do that or what? I don't even think he's there.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll keep going.
I said, sorry, I'm here. Yeah, I said, I don't know. I like to impress people, so, you know, wife's bra is the way to do it.
Now Eli's not with us, but I'm going to read his anyway.
Yeah.
Eli's is actually the same as last year.
He would want you to read his.
What's that?
He would want you to read his.
I know. And I'm disappointed in Eli. Because this was his resolution last year, and he wasn't able to live up to it. I know a lot of people abandoned their resolutions by February, but come on, Eli. Eli's resolution again this year is that he's finally going to move out of his parents' basement.
Yeah, yeah. I think he got close this year, but...
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. He should move into his buddy's basement. What's his buddy's name again?
Oh, yeah, Mac, 24/7, yeah.
Yeah, he should move into Mac's basement.
Yeah.
I'm sure Mac would have him. Mac loves him.
Yeah, that's true.
Profoundly. Sorry, long, uncomfortable pause. next is our buddy Tom McNeely. And Tom knows that it's going to be an uphill battle, but he's decided that he needs to take down the sticker on his boat that says, "Comics, gas, or ass, nobody rides for free." And I think it's because he's getting a lot more kids on his boat, so he knows it's time for Tom to change his lifestyle a little bit.
Yeah, he's got to clean it up a little bit.
Yeah. And then another one of our buddies who isn't here tonight, who I thought was going to be, but he's watching football instead, that's Bill Dunleavy, and he's decided that this is the year that he takes his albinism seriously. And he's going to begin investigating his roots as a long-lost relative of Vlad the Impaler.
the undead Billy Dunleavy.
Yeah. Okay, so last but not least, you know, we couldn't do the show without talking about our own resolutions.
Right.
So my co-host himself, Father Jeff, who is going to hopefully be giving up, purposely choosing the opposite of all of my picks on the show just to bother me.
That's true. Yeah. I'm giving that up, so that means I'm going to pick exactly what you pick. And I've already got a good string going here, so we'll see what happens.
You pick the opposite of me in books, and then you copy my picks in the fights.
That's true, yeah.
Unbelievable.
There you go.
I'm the Canadian Cape Killer, and I've decided that I'm going to give up our annual seal hunt. We've decided that the bad press is just not worth a year's supply of lamp oil.
You're a bad person.
Happy New Year, comic nerds worldwide. We are the COC.
God. Oh, boy. Well, before we get started, we want to give our friend Decapitated Dan a little plug. Dan is in the process of changing hobbies. He's purging his comic collection in favor of My Little Pony figurines. So if you have any My Little Pony figurines for sale, please contact Decapitated Dan at decapitateddan@comicattack.net. He would really appreciate it. And again, that's decapitateddan@comicattack.net with the subject line My Little Pony. So
yeah, that includes T-shirts, bedside lamps.
Yes, anything. Yeah. So
any pony paraphernalia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Send it his way. He's really looking for that stuff. So.
And he is our podcast number one fan. So anything we can do to help him out.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. So well, guys, there wasn't a whole lot in the way of books released this week because everything came out the week before. So this part should be kind of short and sweet. So all of us are gonna select two books from this week's releases. One that they were disappointed with, and one that they enjoyed. And maybe I would go so far to say, if you didn't pick anything up and you just read something, maybe you got a Christmas gift or something like that that you wanted to put as your high or your low. Then let us know what that is. But because it was such slim pickings this week. So, Ian, why don't you go first?
Okay. My high was from the Before Watchmen series, and it was Night Owl number 4, and it was number 4 of 4. The series is now over. It wasn't, you know, so when I give it my high, it's mostly because I had to pick something. It was good, don't get me wrong, but the best part about the book was Rorschach, and what happened with Rorschach was the best part about the book. It just happened to be better than the other things that I read this week. I was going to pick Aquaman, but I think actually that the next issue of Aquaman will be really good. This one was just sort of meh.
That's what they've been saying about Aquaman for 40 years now. The next issue is going to be really good. You got to get the next issue.
Wait, isn't the next issue the new Atlantis storyline?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, on the very last panel, he grabs Batman by the throat, which I thought was good.
Yeah,
I won't say too much about that. But so yeah, that's my high. You know, whatever. My low is the one that I actually want to talk about, and that would be The Amazing Spider-Man number 700. Mm. I thought that book. Now, I don't collect Amazing Spider-Man. I probably have a total of maybe 30 Amazing Spider-Man books in total. Just, you know, here and there, hit and miss, pick it up when somebody talks about it or some special cover or something like that. So I got this book, you know, why not? And I don't think I needed to know too much about the backstory to figure it out. It was pretty clear what was going on. And I thought the story was really stupid. And I thought the resolution of the story was, like, you know, I think it was last week or the week before that we were making fun of people that were you know, posing death threats against Dan Slott. Well, now I know why. and not because you know he did something to the ever beloved Spider-Man. I think people were threatening his life because he ended the story so crappy. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a crummy ending. So yeah, that's what you get for wrecking a story, dude.
So you didn't read 698?
Nah, what for?
I mean, but so, okay.
It was one of those issues where Spider-Man and the editorial and all the little bubbles and stuff, they told me everything I needed to know from the past 10 issues, you know?
Okay. Well, so what I'm saying is that you jumped in on the last issue of the series in the last part of the storyline. So, of course, this isn't going to really wow you because really the real story was in 698. And so that's a nice segue into my high, which was Amazing Spider-Man number 700, because in 698 was where it was revealed that Dr. Octopus had pulled off this plan, but nobody knew how. It was kind of just completely out of the blue. For the most part, the media kept it a secret. There were a few people who had leaked some stuff, but I didn't read any of those spoilers or anything, so I was really surprised. And I loved it. I just thought this was great. And so leading into this to 700, the thought is, well, we know that Superior Spider-Man is coming up, and so there's a good chance that Otto will continue to be Spider-Man. But would they really do that? And would they actually kill Peter? Or would they just, put his body in stasis or something like that? And I'm sure that may happen eventually. But this was my high because they actually had the balls to go through with this. And to actually end the series with Peter dying and having Otto...
Spoiler alert.
Well, if you're going to listen to this show, if you're going to listen to anything with me, you got to know I'm going to spoil things. I just thought that they actually followed through with the plan, which I thought was pretty gutsy, considering that nothing really new has been done with Spider-Man in forever. This was just so out of the blue, I thought. And plus you had the awesome Ramos art, which just continues to be excellent. So I thought that this was a fantastic.
You know what they should have done? They should have made Aunt May the new Spider-Man.
I don't think that would have been a better idea. But
Otto. I don't know. Otto's a pretty good choice, but.
Yeah, shut up.
Really?
My low though was Avenging Spider-Man number 15.1, which was kind of a follow-up to 700, and it just didn't have the same. I don't know. My only concern about this whole thing is if they make him a big of an ass as he kind of was in a couple of these. Parts where he's calling Mary Jane woman and all this kind of stuff. Like if they continue to make him an ass, then this whole thing is going to be a debacle. But if they start developing him, and that's what I thought was great about at the end of 700 was he got to finally experience all of Peter's memories to the fullest and got to see what really makes him Spider-Man and he really bought into that Spider-Man mythos. Avenging Spider-Man didn't quite seem like Otto had he still seemed too much like Dr. Octopus to me. So, I think that this is kind of a fun direction that's never really been done like this before, and I have to give Dan Slott some credit for going ahead with it. So those are mine. Dan, how about you, Spider-Man geek?
Well, the only book that I did read this week was 700, so it'll be my high and my low.
Yes. Did you send Dan Slott some death threats?
No, not at all. Actually, okay. I congratulated him on a good story, and I don't know. I enjoyed it. I don't know what people are freaking out about, especially since just in reading it, like the only thing I could think of, this isn't even permanent. Like,
no, there's no way.
There's no way. It's not going to stay that way. So why not just enjoy the ride? Like, let's just explore this for a little bit, have some fun with it, and Peter will eventually be back in into webbed costumes. So just hang on and read good stories. That's it.
Exactly.
Man, I don't get it at all. You guys are crazy. I don't know how Brand New Day is crap and everyone was like bashing it. But then Otto Octavius takes over as Spider-Man and it's like, you know, this is great. It's like, what? This is not great. It's freaking Otto Octavius. And he all of a sudden he gets Peter's memories and all of a sudden he's like, you know what? I think I'm a good guy now. I'm Spider-Man. What? This guy's one of the most...
Don't forget,
like
it wasn't...
Guy that didn't read 698 or 699.
Yeah, right. I know. It wasn't specifically... It's not Doc Ock's consciousness that's in Peter. All that...
What?
It was he hacked into Peter's brain and then recoded his brain patterns to match Doc Ock's. So there was no transference of anything. He just recoded Peter to think like Doc Ock. So that's going to be reversed eventually. It's still Peter in, like, you know, pretty much every aspect of it, except for the fact that they're Otto Octavius's brain patterns. That's it.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, that explains it.
All right, Tom, how about you?
That's a doubting Thomas okay. Over there.
I'm going to start with my low, which was Wonder Woman 15. And it's just, this series is plodded along for 15 issues now with no, hasn't been a whole lot of development, and I'm not really, I'm not liking the art in it either. So it's, I think the story might have some promise. They're reintroducing new gods now. Orion makes an appearance here, and they're bringing that storyline along with the whole but there's this whole thing with essentially it's Wonder Woman's just one of a whole brood of Zeus's bastard offspring from the 20th century that are getting together to protect like his first offspring of the 21st century, and it's kind of a complicated mess of a plot that's not really going, it doesn't seem to be really be going anywhere, and I'm not really sold. I haven't liked Cliff Chang's art on the story either. And I'm still not sold on Wonder Woman's new costume. It's just too bland for me. It's taken out all the spark and pizzazz out of her old costume and not really replacing it with anything. So that was my low point of the week. My high point, actually, I had two issues I wanted to highlight, and they're both Death in the Family crossovers, or Death of the Family crossovers. Red Hood and the Outlaws 15 and Batman and Robin 15. And in both cases, it's Joker versus two of the Robins. In Batman and Robin, it's Damian going. Damian violates orders, leaves the Batcave, and goes out, and ends up running into the Joker, who reveals that the reason he's going after the Robins is that he feels that they hold Batman back and prevent him from being the true person he can be, and like the perfect foil for Joker. So he sees it as a service to rid the world of all the Robins. And it's also I think Jeff, was it you or Ian last week who was talking about the in Batman 15 where like Batman kicks Joker and his face sloshes across.
Oh yeah, that was me. Yeah. So,
yeah, when Damian wakes up in the aviary where he ends up falling through the roof, he wakes up and Joker's hanging over him upside down with his face put on upside down.
Oh,
so
nice.
His teeth are shining through the eyes. His eyes are gaping through the mouth. It's pretty gross, and it ends up being this whole basically psychological issue with Joker and the current Robin going out. And of course, Damian's fighting back as much as he can, while being paralyzed by Joker toxin and tied up the whole time. So that was pretty good. It was really good issue, and it highlights a lot of what you guys were talking about last week with how Joker's really getting into Batman's head this time. Right. And the other one, Red Hood and the Outlaws, I highlighted that as my book last week too. It's just great. It's just being really well done, and it starts out with Jason Todd kind of being caught in a bathrobe with his lady friend from the night before. Passed out from an overdose. She'd been forcibly OD'd while he was in the shower. So he comes out and finds her unconscious and calls the police. And there, he has to fight his way out. And he ends up getting captured by the Joker. And he wakes up and Joker's got basically a crowbar impaled through his Red Hood mask, nice. Sitting beside him. And Jason's paralyzed with a neurotoxin. Joker's, you know, just kind of lording it over him and cracking jokes about how he killed him before and so on. It's just this whole Jason having to confront the guy who killed him. And, of course, Jason's got some tricks up his sleeve, such as the fact that since his resurrection, he trained with some monks who basically taught him how to overcome these neurotoxins. So he gets to jump on Joker. And two of them fight out, but Joker's booby-trapped a crowbar, so when Jason picks it up, it zaps him. But it ends up, you know, Joker then takes him through a whole gauntlet where he's confronting him with his worst memories of childhood, of him finding his mother strung out and the bullet that he used to shoot his father with, things like that. It's like Joker has been tracking them for years and seems to know everything about them, more than they even know about themselves. So it's another really good psychological issue.
How is Joker doing all of these things?
That's what hasn't been quite revealed yet. They did mention, and I think it was Batman. Was it Batman 15? Hang on, I've got them all here.
Well, yeah.
Batman 15.
I mean, yeah. Bruce brings them all to the cave, and they're all talking and stuff, and he says, you know, watch out for the Joker. So, like, why didn't they all just, like, stick together?
Well, they didn't. Even Bruce wasn't sure what. Well, the thing was, Bruce was saying it's like after their first meeting or after his second meeting, he thinks Joker may have found a way into the cave, but there's no way he could have made it in a cave. So it's the thing was, he found found the Joker's calling card in the Batcave after he got back, and so it's possible that the Joker's had access to the Batcave for a long time. But he hasn't. He doesn't see how that's possible. But that seems to have everybody kind of creeped out. But no one's quite sure what to believe on it. So yeah, most of these issues were after that, and they're like, you know, it's not possible Joker knows everything about us, and then he keeps popping up with things that, you know, that he shouldn't know.
Right.
So, yeah, Death of the Family is being really well done.
Hmm. All right. Katniss is calling you, Tom. So we'll move
sorry.
On. That's okay. Speech. How about you, man?
All right. Well, my high would be Spider-Man 700, because I'm like Ian. I appreciate, and kind of like you said, Jeff, I echo that they had the balls to go through it and put it and still make it fun. I mean, whether or not it's Octavius or not, it's not like it's pudgy, out of shape Octavius just throwing on the costume looking like Peter Porker. I mean, it's him and Peter's body doing, you know, everything that Pete can. And that one scene where, like, he realizes that for all these years, Peter's been holding back, because when he cut loose and knocked off Gargan's jaw, I mean, that was just beautiful.
That was nice.
He was like, oh my God, this kid has been holding back all of these years. He could have killed me with just one punch. You know, and that also shows you just how really strong Parker is. But, I mean, it was a good issue. It was fun. But, you know, it I do want to see how long that we'll be able to see Octavius and the body of Parker, or however it is being explained now. And my low will be Aquaman, because I felt like for it to be an Atlantis story, the Justice League issue was a whole lot stronger than the Aquaman one. This one was, like you said, it was a bit meh. I expected more, since it seems like it's going to center on him and his brother and his people. It just felt real, real weak. So yeah, those are my two.
But next issue is gonna be really good.
Next issue is gonna be better.
That's what I hear. It's the one to get, Aquaman. Well, what do we got in the news this week, Ian?
Well, the first thing that I was gonna talk about was Amazing Spider-Man 700, but I think we've talked a lot about that, so I won't talk about that.
Okay.
So instead, the first thing we'll talk about is some sad news, or some worrisome news, and that's the news that came across Twitter today, that Peter David has suffered a stroke, and it sounds like he's the one who actually reported it on the internet, telling people that he did have a stroke.
Yeah, so, it was on his blog.
I haven't heard too much more from anyone based on that, other than people, you know, saying that they're praying for Peter David and stuff like that, but yeah, so here on the COC, we hope he gets better. We hope he gets well. I know Dan and Jeff are big fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, yeah. I am. Yeah, we don't really know much, but I'm guessing that, you know, if he was well enough to at least, you know, get out a quick blurb on his blog, that he's, you know, that he's at least coherent. I mean, it's not like a completely debilitating stroke, so, but still, he lost movement in all right side of his body, and, I mean, it's just really scary, so, I guess when I heard it from Decapitated Dan mentioned something about it, and he said, oh, y'all have to mention something about Peter David, and I was like, oh, shit, Peter David died, and I was like, oh, crap, so I was a little bit actually relieved to hear that it was a stroke, and he was okay, and he was, you know, recovering and all that stuff. So yeah, I wish him the best. I hope he gets well soon.
Yeah, good. So next, I thought we'd finish off the news with the close of 2012. That maybe we could all just do a quick 2012 in review, and maybe pick what we felt was the best of 2012 and what the worst of 2012 was. For myself, I thought that the best for me was kind of a surprise series, and that would be Saga, I don't know how you say it, by Image Comics, and I thought it was great, a great offbeat story that had no real ties to anything that I knew in comics. It just read real well. It's very intriguing. It'll make a great movie, that's for sure. My worst of the year was I was gonna focus on the X books, but then I thought, there's some things that have come out of the X books that I don't mind. Even if you look at the atrocity that was Avengers versus X-Men, and it really was an atrocity. The good that I pull out of it is that we wouldn't be where we are right now in the X universe, in the Avengers universe, without that really bad story arc. So, and I think where we are right now is a good place. So that's why I didn't focus on that as my worst. Instead, what I put for my worst of the year is the way I worded it was a rudderless Marvel universe. And what I mean by that is it seemed like 2012 went by and Marvel really had no real direction in any of their books. They really accomplished nothing in the year 2012. They had lots of little storylines, you know, but all in all, I don't know, it was like a big mess. You know, there was no clarity whatsoever with the Marvel landscape. At least that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jeff?
It could have been them just hold biding time until Marvel Now, because they knew they were going to do the relaunch, so they were just biding time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's the blessing and the curse of doing these big company wide like relaunches or whatever, is that, you know, those few months before it's just basically pointless stuff. So no good stories are being told and that kind of stuff. So
there's some really interesting stats that are online now too. I was going to talk about it in this news section, but I didn't really know how to say it because it's all graphs and things like that, but it's all based on sales and you know, who owns what market share in sales, and a lot of it was based on graphic novels and things like that. And it, of all the lists that I saw, DC kicked the hell out of Marvel in book sales. And, you know, when you have a big year with the Avengers movie coming out the way that it did, that's almost inexcusable. Do you know what I mean? Like, just incidental sales themselves should have gone through the roof for Marvel. Right. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that they had really crappy stories this year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. even blockbuster movies and things like that couldn't save them. I think Image did better than they did. And that has a lot to do with The Walking Dead and the success of The Walking Dead. But then again, there you go. You tie this media franchise to the book sales. You should be able to do the same thing in Marvel. You know what I mean? Like, so it's, to me, it's a direct relation to the fact that their books suck this year.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that my best of the year was also Saga, but you kind of went in that direction, and I will just say that it's nice to see that Saga, that there are original stories to be told out there, and there is a way to do something that's original, that is fun, that's not tied to anything from the past, and Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples are doing that. I mean, yeah, you could say, oh, this is a space opera epic like Star Wars or something like that. I mean, but it's if you read it, it's nothing really like Star Wars. I just think it's just a really refreshing book. But anyway, but actually my real best, and you just reminded me of it, was really the Avengers movie. I just thought this, it blew. It just blew up everything. And it is a shame that Marvel kind of dropped the ball with it, and kind of continues to drop the ball with it, I think, with the Avengers right now. But yeah, I just think that movie was the perfect movie that they could have made. And I just think, well done, Joss Whedon, and Marvel Studios for getting him on board and really helping him or getting him to kind of steer the ship there. My worst, going back to a little bit of what you're talking about, Ian, is really most of the X-Men books are my worst, which is a shame because it's my favorite franchise, and with the exception of Uncanny X-Force and then recently, I think the beginning of Wolverine and the X-Men, and then this new all new X-Men book, the rest of there's seven or eight titles out there that are just not worth anything, and Dan and Speech and I cover these books every week on ComicAttack.net on the X-Piles, and it's like it gets harder and harder every week because it's just like, oh my gosh, what am I going to say about this book? And really, overall, our reviews have not been very positive. It's just been kind of a we rate. On the X-Piles, we rate books, each book out of a possible 40, and really the highest book even right now is like 32, which, 30s is pretty good, but it's not like stellar. I think Dan rated one at 40 out of 40, and that was all new X-Men number one, but for the most part, it's just been a down year for the X-Men books, and I don't understand why. Because they've got some good creators on these books, but it just doesn't. I mean, Marjorie Liu on Astonishing. I mean, I like her. I want to like her book. Brian Wood was doing Adjectiveless X-Men, and I wanted to like that, but it just, I don't know. I don't know if the X-Men at this point are so mired by their editorial staff that they just aren't allowed to do anything exciting. I don't know. You really have to have somebody like Brian Bendis or Rick Remender who can come in and do these big ideas who will, and it takes somebody that big to have the pull, I think, with editorial in order for them to actually let them do stuff that's meaningful in the X-Men universe. So, 2012 has just not been a good year for X-Men books.
All right, Speech, what about you?
Well, kind of just to echo you two again, Saga was the high point of 2012 for me. Like, just in terms of this consistency, and it was new and it was fresh, and the fact that Image does prove that, you can still have fresh new ideas and great books and great comics are still out there that aren't tied into the whole superhero, this guy wears tights, this guy has powers type stories. It's just a really good story, and it can be told. And one of my lows is the fact that the big two are just, it just really seems like they're recycling more and more. I mean, even with DC's new 52, there isn't anything that's that exciting to come out of the new 52 to me, and with Marvel it just seems like we're getting a bit more of the same oldness, and it's more evident with the X titles because they're just corny as hell now.
Good point.
All right, Tom, how about you?
Okay, my high point of the year, I would have to say, just to get some variety to it, before Watchmen. And DC's done a good job of capitalizing on the Watchmen genre without exploiting it, I don't think. I think they've done a really good job. I think we discussed this last week or week before, that they've done a really good job of integrating this into the original Watchmen and not taking away from the original story, but adding to it. And not changing too much of the original story, but trying to fit in with what's already there. And they've done a good job. They've told stories well. They've had great creators, and they've taken the project really seriously, and haven't put out, you know, they haven't overdone it, like put out too many miniseries and too much variation on the themes. They tried to keep it tightly focused and so on. So I think they've done a really good job with that. For my worst of the year, I would say Rob Liefeld's rampage to the new 52.
Yeah.
And the fact that his original books, he started with the rollout. Once they failed, they put him on other books. They promptly took downhill. And I think the Savage Hawkman issue I got this week was I think it might have been his last one before he quit. So, or there might be one more after it. I'm not sure, but. Anyway, the middle part of the DC lineup has been really weakened by his mid-range heroes, the Hawkman and Grifter and so on. Once he took them over, they kind of went downhill. I really liked Grifter before he took it over, and he seemed to take it downhill. So anyway, that was mine. I'll keep it short.
All right, Dan, how about you?
I don't have much more to add that hasn't already been said. I think I tend to agree with speech. The big two came up short this year, and especially considering all the marketing and hoopla that they did about, you know, their big relaunches and their big initiatives, and I think they just fell flat. Whereas I think this was Image's year. I haven't read many Image titles, but I've heard good things about. They have some really strong titles out there right now. So I think they're a bit of the underdog. They came up and put some good stories out there. So I think the big two should look a little bit more Image's way to scale things back a bit and just tell good stories. I mean, we've been saying this for years. And yet we still go out there every week and buy the big stories. So, you know, it's a sad cycle, but that's what it is. So, yeah, I wasn't impressed overall with 2012, especially when it came to Marvel. So,
you know, I mean, it really is. Marvel finds themselves, and probably DC too, in a little bit of a catch-22. Because here they're trying to reboot things because they know that with the movie... I mean, they know that with the movies really are what... is the driving force at this point. Financially, those are the money makers, are the movies and the TV franchises and those kind of things. And the comic books are, you know, unfortunately, while they are the originators of all of these properties, they're just not, people just aren't, you know, gonna go there. So in some senses, they're catering to those people and trying to get new people in, but then that dilutes their storytelling. And so they can't, yeah. Like, they hamstring themselves, and they can't tell, you know, these off-the-wall stories. I mean, every once in a while, one comes through, like Dan Slott pitching. You know, can you imagine what that pitch was like? Okay, I want to make Dr. Octopus Spider-Man for a little while, you know? Like, and it, you know, and especially coming off of a pretty successful Amazing Spider-Man movie. And then they decide that they're going to cancel Amazing Spider-Man and relaunch Superior. And I mean, it's interesting just to know kind of what the inner workings are there. But I think they're going to look at kind of their thing, and they say, well, you know, until Image starts, and maybe with the Walking Dead TV show they are, but until Image starts producing movies in the same way that, you know, the amount of movies that Image is putting out, then we'll talk about, you know, who's doing better than who. But I don't know. I mean,
you're right in that. I think Marvel and DC have kind of constrained themselves to, they're locked in the past. Like, they can't come out with a brand new Avengers lineup when you've got Avengers 2 coming out with the tie-in movies. So you can't have the, you know, people wanting to go see the Avengers in comics and, wait, these aren't the Avengers I saw on TV on the movie.
Yeah. So, it's kind of sad, though. To me, it's kind of not sad, but a bit of a shame that the big two, especially Marvel, went through this big, you know, reinventing themselves and their line with Marvel Now, and which you know, if we look at Indestructible Hulk and we look at, you know, some people like the Avengers, but it seems like they had this perfect chance to just go wherever they wanted to at this point. But now that the movies are so successful, they're still shoehorning themselves, you know, within the constraints of the movie world, just so that they don't stray too far from that and shy some readers away. So it's a bit of a shame.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, moving on a little bit, it seems as though everyone in the Marvel Universe is a martial arts expert these days. So it goes without saying that... Yeah, exactly. So it goes without saying, however, that few can top such masters as Iron Fist and Shang-Chi when discussing hand-to-hand prowess. So the open forum for tonight, our fight club, is if these two were to duke it out, what do you think the outcome would be? And there is a stunning silence.
I already know who I'm going for.
Well, talk about it. Go for it.
Iron Fist.
Iron Fist has it. Yeah, Iron Fist has it hands down.
Why?
Hands down.
Talk to us a little bit about Chi speech.
All right.
It can stop a train.
Yeah. Chi can stop a train. It can heal you, and it can... Basically, Iron Fist has it when it just comes to the amount of pure stamina he has, and it's due to the inherent power of the dragon he absorbs.
So he can go a long time, is what you're saying?
Pretty much. Okay. He can go a long time.
All right.
You know, it's evident by the fact that, you know, of how he was able to last against the hordes of enemies that were thrown at him in the Eighth City, and the fact that he fights... you know, if he can go toe-to-toe with the other immortal Iron Fist, I mean, I'm sorry, the immortal weapons, well, yeah, and the other immortal Iron Fist before him, those are, I guess for lack of a better term, magically enhanced fighters. And Danny has the magic and the power and the martial arts expertise, whereas Shang-Chi is just your regular baseline human who's achieved peak physical perfection. So yeah, you know, he'll give Danny a run for his money, but in the end, Danny has it hands down. And I think Shang-Chi, I know he's called the master of kung fu, and I don't know if he's mastered all 180 something plus styles of kung fu, but Danny has a few more styles up under his belt other than just one style, which is just kung fu. So
that kind of sucks for Shang-Chi. Like, that's that's his thing, is that he's the master of kung fu, and yet,
Just kung fu. I mean, Danny knows many styles. I'm not saying that Shang-Chi is a slouch or you know, it'd be an easy fight, but Danny can heal himself while he's fighting. He's faster, stronger, you know, a little bit more fight savvy.
Yeah. Anybody think?
Well, I know Ian doesn't believe in Chi. He spits on Chi.
Does anybody think that Shang-Chi can? He's got Chi in his name, so he's got.
I think Shang-Chi wins.
Really?
Yeah, I was leaning towards Shang-Chi just because he's beaten. I don't know much about him, but I have seen him beat, you know, people he really shouldn't be beating. You know, he's the kind of guy that tends to win through wiliness and can overcome people with powers. And so he's survived some pretty unlikely battles before.
I know that Iron Fist is just a victim of bad writing over the past bunch of years, And he's one of my favorite, or sorry, he used to be one of my favorite characters. But I found over the past number of years, like 5 years or so, he's the way his fights are choreographed in the books and the way, like what skills he's shown, he's depicted as having, I find him kind of like a lazy fighter now. And again, I know that's just, he's pure victim of bad writing. You know what I mean? Like Brian Michael Bendis had no interest at all in writing Iron Fist. You know what I mean? So Iron Fist played no role in New Avengers whatsoever. But I think just based on what I've seen in the books, I think Shang-Chi's a better fighter, a better hand-to-hand fighter. And I could see him setting it up so that Iron Fist never even lays a finger on him. And then he eventually just chokes Iron Fist out.
Nah. I mean, even if you just skip what Bendis was forcing, you know, he was just throw him in there for comic relief. But if you just go back to Iron Fist, you know, recent solo series plus the couple of spin-off annual books, I mean, the guy was dodging and blocking bullets, catching bullets, and not bullets shot from handguns. These were bullets coming from, you know, high-powered sniper rifles. So I mean, with that amount of speed and precision right there, I'm sorry, he just beat Shang-Chi hands down. I mean, the guy can level a mountain, and I know he's not going to use that amount of power to, you know, take out Shang-Chi because that's his buddy, but still, you got a guy who can do all of that and move that fast and is that strong and knows and isn't just a master of one style of martial arts. He can come in Shang-Chi in so many ways, whether it's the ground game, whether it's upright, whether it's in the air, he's got Shang-Chi hands down.
But see, even in the Iron Fist series, when Iron Fist was fighting the Immortal Weapons, in that tournament, in that mystical tournament, he was getting his ass kicked by every single one of them. Do you know what I mean?
He threw the fight with Fat Cobra so he could go and play Batman and do his detective work. He threw his fight, but when he fought the Steel Serpent, who was basically his equivalent, he beat the crap out of him, and the Steel Serpent was beating the hell out of everyone else.
That's not the way I remember it. I remember Fat Cobra pounding the hell out of him, and I remember him crapping his pants having to fight Dog Brother, like worrying about going up against the Prince of Orphans, I mean. I think he's a joke of a character. Like, I think he's got massive potential, and, you know, for a good writer got his hands on him and wanted to use him, you could turn him into a wicked character, but I don't know. I think he's, you said it best, I think he's comic relief at best.
Well, all right. Anybody else want to chime in? No? All right. Well, speaking of fights, in this segment, this is our fight of the week, and every week we choose a category of fighter, and each of us will choose in that category in advance. So, for example, like a flyer, a matter manipulator, omega level character, etc. And each of us is asked to secretly pick who one fighter who fits in that category to defend against the other managers. So, if multiple guests pick the same fighter, then they can gang up on the other hosts or guests. If the majority of guests vote that a particular fighter violates that week's cap, the fighter will be disallowed and the manager publicly shamed as a cheater. So, what happened last week, Ian?
Well, last week, under the category of biologically powered characters, and who did Eli try to get? He wanted to pick the Watcher or something like that.
No, Magneto.
Oh, right. Magneto. Because magnetism is biological powered. And then Tom was going to back him up in some crazy way, too. once we got down to reality and we talked a little bit more, Kate, Speech, and Jeff, we all picked Krakoa. And Eli and Tom picked the ever-dangerous Hydro Man. And the comicattack.former.com poll picked Krakoa as the winner, receiving 80% of the votes.
Nice.
Yeah, they spoke. So for this week, guests were tasked to draft one character who was teleported to the battle world by the Beyonder in the original Secret Wars series. And the only person we said who wasn't eligible was the Beyonder.
Wait, hold. Go back just a little bit to Krakoa and Hydra Man. That means you and I right now have the most wins. Is that right?
Undefeated. Yeah.
Undefeated. You and I are undefeated.
And the rest.
And the rest of these jokers have all lost something, right?
You know what's hey Jeff. You know, want to know what's interesting is Eli. Back when you and I weren't playing, we couldn't keep him off the show. And I don't know if you've noticed that since we've been involved in it, that we can't get him on the show.
Yeah, I know.
Interesting. Wow.
So Secret Wars. So we're doing Secret Wars tonight.
So Dan, by the way, you didn't say where we're fighting.
On Battleworld.
On Battleworld.
On Battleworld. Okay. I didn't know if we were gonna stay with that verb. Okay.
So Dan had texted me and asked if he could pick first. So Dan's gonna tell his first.
Nice. That's how you do it. That's how you do it right there.
It's horse shit. I'm gonna go ahead and pick Hulk.
Hulk.
Holding up a mountain.
That's pretty good.
He's good at holding mountains.
All right, Speech, how about you?
Galactus.
Galactus. Okay. Tom?
I was also picking Galactus.
Galactus, good for you.
Great mind, think alike.
Good pick.
That's okay, we can gang up on everybody now.
There you go.
Eli's not here. Jeff?
There's only one. And that is
me?
There's only one, and that is Galactus.
Galactus, good pick. That's a good pick.
And I know exactly who you're gonna pick, and I know why you went last.
What?
No, go ahead.
No, I'm gonna pick Magneto.
Okay.
I'm surprised nobody picked. Is that everybody? I'm surprised nobody picked Doctor Doom.
Yeah, he
was my second.
Yeah, he was my second.
He's my second choice too.
Not bad.
Yeah. Really, out of that whole group, Magneto was a good pick. Professor X might have been a good pick. Doom, I think. And
Enchantress would have been a good pick.
Who?
Enchantress or Thor?
No. She gets bitch slapped early on in the series.
But if she plays the back, you know, she tried to get mouthy. That's all. She got lippy.
Well, that's true. So, all right.
Claw was my second. So,
Claw?
Claw? Really?
Claw. Oh,
you haven't read Secret Wars.
Oh my God.
Claw is like an idiot in that. Although it is kind of funny how he gets kind of cut up into a bunch of little pieces and he's just sitting around. You know, I don't know. It's funny. All right. So we've got Magneto versus Galactus versus Hulk.
Good fight.
All right.
Who wants to go first?
Let's let Dan go first.
Hulk smash?
All right, there you go.
No, I don't know. Yeah, next. No, I mean Hulk smash. He would punch people until they're knocked out. I don't know. I don't really have any sort of rationale except that Hulk is the strongest one there is.
And he did hold up a mountain.
He served the purpose. He plays an excellent pillar.
And in Secret Wars, he is he's not just dumb Hulk. He is also got Banner's intelligence.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm trying to help you out here a little bit. So
throwing you a bone.
Yeah. So
there you go. He's strong and smart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if he's smart enough in this fight, he'll just hang out. He'll just hang out and leave.
He'd hold up Galactus's boot.
Well, but okay. So this is where I discount Hulk. Hulk gets his leg broken in this series.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So that's
that wicked cast though.
He did. He had a crutch. It was like this huge big metal crutch.
Yeah, it had some shocks on it and stuff.
That was pretty cool. Reed Richards made it for him. So, but yeah, he got his leg broken. I forgot who it was that broke it, but was
like
it,
to me?
Who?
If we're doing the Secret Wars thing, why didn't we? Who won?
Well, that's why that's what makes Secret Wars so good, is that there's not a clear winner in Secret Wars. So that's why I was
there. Except there are clear losers.
They're definitely clear losers.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan, that's a really good segue, actually, to say that there are clear losers.
Okay. Magneto being one of them.
What does Galactus do in this book? I forget.
He starts to eat the planet, and then Dr. Doom steals the power.
But he didn't... Dr. Doom used a machine that he made to steal Galactus' power.
Hold on. Before all of this, Galactus is the only one brave enough to go and actually fight the Beyonder face to face. And he goes up.
He took out Ultron. He took out a team.
Oh, that's
leader.
Right. Yeah, that's
he took
right.
out Ultron.
He takes out Ultron. He goes up and he gets blasted by the Beyonder, and he falls back to the planet. And then he says, okay, well, here's my next strategy. Basically, I'm going to bring my ship here, and I'm just going to devour the crap out of this world, and I'm not going to team up with anybody because I don't need to, because I'm freaking awesome.
And my name is Galactus.
Yeah.
So pretty much, Magneto's toast.
And so even when Dr. Doom tries to steal Beyonder's power, he smacks the crap out of Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom tries to sneak up and tries to do something to Galactus, and Galactus just blasts him, and it takes Dr. Doom out. Who Dr. Doom arguably is he's one of the top. If anybody actually does anything in the series, it's Dr. Doom. I mean, the guy, he's always on the offensive, always, and eventually gets the Beyonder's power because he goes to all those extremes, and he's manipulating people here and there. So but Galactus just flicks him like a fly, and he's toast, and he's laying on his bed for a whole issue.
Yeah, I mean, Galactus will be able to, he's got the power, he has full control of the power cosmic. He can just basically suck all the gamma energy out of Banner. And that's the end of the Hulk, and then Magneto's really nothing more than a fly speck to him. So,
I mean, and if push comes to shove, we'll just eat Battleworld.
What's that?
I said, if push comes to shove, we'll just eat Battleworld.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's space.
Yeah. So what you got, Magneto?
So does Galactus eating Battleworld considered leaving the environment, or
he wouldn't have to eat the environment in order to win this, though. I mean, we're talking about fighting Hulk, whose leg is like glass, and Magneto, who really doesn't do anything but try to put the moves on Wasp throughout the whole series. I mean, in fact, if Magneto were so great, I don't see him doing anything really of significance in the entire book. I kind of thought, when I first read it, that he would be kind of the dark horse, because he gets teleported in with the rest of the X-Men and the heroes, and you kind of think, okay, Magneto's really going to be a breakout character here, and he does kind of break off and do his own little thing for a little while, but it never comes of any consequence, and he ends up joining back up with the X-Men, and really there's nothing that he can really do.
Isn't that around the time he led them? Wasn't that around the time he was leading the X-Men, when he had the big M on his chest?
Yeah, he came back and took over for Xavier after they got back.
Yeah, okay.
Well, and so sure. So I know what Ian will probably say, well, Galactus is made of metal, or he has metal components or whatever, and
yeah,
that's
but
how...
his physiology, he's made of energy, so even if the suit is ripped, the suit is just made, you know, to, you know, he'll still be alive without the suit. He's not like flesh and blood with organs and hearts and lungs.
Yeah.
Yeah, his armor just helps regulate his energy, and Magneto's not going to be able to impact it well enough to incapacitate Galactus.
No, not at all.
Galactus is a world beater. He's a, you know, class one level threat. He's basically a force of nature, as he's been described before.
Yeah. All right, Magneto, what you got?
Oh, you're going to let me talk now?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, well, what I was going to say is that Magneto's not really worried about Galactus at all, because if you read the Secret Wars series, Galactus does nothing. He's like the dreaming celestial. He just stands there for the entire series. So in the very first book, you know, because he's scared and he's afraid of the Beyonder, he tries to leave, and Beyonder slaps him back down to battle.
No. He goes to fight the Beyonder.
Oh, because he okay. sensed the energy. Because he wanted the energy, and as soon as he felt it, I think he got, like, hungry. And he said, I need that energy, so... I don't think he was scared.
No, I think he said that nobody can hold Galactus or something like that. Nobody can keep Galactus. He was
boasting.
He was just leaving. He's just leaving. He's afraid. So he's going to leave Battleworld because he's afraid. So what happens is Beyonder flicks Galactus back down to the Earth, and then Galactus is all sad. So Galactus, he shows Doctor Doom and Ultron how tough he is, because he flicks both of them. And then for the rest of that, was it eight issues or 12?
It's a 12-issue miniseries, yeah.
12 issues. For the rest of the 12 issues, Beyonder's not in it. Or not Beyonder, Galactus is not in it. I don't know where he is. He's just standing somewhere, sulking. And that's the whole reason why I was hoping people would pick Galactus, and the whole reason why I didn't pick Galactus is because Galactus isn't going to fight any of these guys. And he shows that through the whole series. The only reason he even does anything with Doom and Ultron is because Doom and Ultron attack him. He basically just stands there. So
that,
if you want,
that's, you know why? That's because all the other characters are insignificant to Galactus.
No, it's because they're
not a threat to him at all.
He's the epitome of subdued. He's the epitome of subdued.
Just based on the parameters of this series, then.
Yeah.
What's that?
What I'm saying is this fight just based on the parameters of this series?
Right. That's what we're.
Let's just get this straight as well. You have Magneto at his regular power levels and not these amped up fantastical levels that they have the characters at now, which is why, you know, that was even back when Wolverine could be killed, which is why I was hoping somebody would have picked him, because I was like, ah, finally, regular Wolverine, we can just go ahead and kill him and be done with it. But, I mean, still, even, I mean, if these three here are here to fight, they're going to fight, and Hulk is going to get trounced away because Magneto is... slapped him around a couple times, and Smart Hulk is weaker than Incredible Hulk when he's just dumb and just stupid. He was smarter, but he was significantly weaker than he was in the beginning. And then you have Magneto here, who was a little shaky back then as well when it came to exerting the full force of his powers, which he would have to do in order to put Galactus down. So even if Galactus just stood there and did nothing, there is nothing that Magneto and the Hulk can do to take Galactus out. What can they do to put him down and take him out?
No, they don't have to do anything. Magneto or Galactus just subdues himself, right? Galactus just goes, stands in the corner somewhere. So all Magneto's got to do, Magneto's got to lean on his giant foot, and it's like when you're watching wrestling and the guy's on the mat, and he just puts his finger on him to pin him. Same shit, you know. So Magneto's just standing there. He just leans over on Galactus. Galactus is too busy looking up at the sky, pouting. He's not even. He just stands there for 12 issues. He stands there.
He's working on things. He's bringing his ship down, so he's actually trying to consume the planet. He's so disgusted with everything. He's not just not doing anything. He's sitting there. He's trying to consume the planet, so he brings his ship there.
Yeah. He's a deep thinker.
Yeah.
He doesn't consume anything. Seriously, him and the Dreaming Celestial could have a giant staring match. That's what they could do. They could sit there and look at each other for 12 issues to decide who's the toughest, who blinks first or something. This fight comes down to the Hulk and Magneto because Galactus is off standing in a corner somewhere. He plays no role on this planet whatsoever. And I think it's because he's afraid of the Beyonder. He knows the Beyonder just snap him out of existence.
Well, I'll give you that. I mean, yeah, the Beyonder shows that the Beyonder is stronger than he is, but that's not who we're talking about fighting. I mean, Galactus is sitting there. He's ignoring Hulk and Magneto because they're not a threat to him at all.
Yeah, well, so that's what I mean. He's not even going to fight them at all. Like he's not going to.
So if they attack him, like Ultron and Doctor Doom do. Then he'll defend himself.
But that would be like if you, me, and Speech were in a fight, right?
Okay.
And we're all in a room together, and I go in the corner and I start crying. I'm subdued. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm out of the fight.
But the only difference is that Galactus isn't standing in the corner crying. He's actually trying to destroy the world that he's standing on.
Well, no, you can't prove that though. Show me one thing where he does that in those 12 issues.
Well, I'm not saying he does it. He doesn't succeed in destroying Battleworld. But he starts
to consume the planet, and then Doom ends up taking the energy from him and using that to parlay. He reverses it and absorbs Galactus' energy, like reverses the machine. And instead of the machine destroying the planet, the machine destroys Galactus and Doom gets that power and uses that to take on the Beyonder. Isn't that how it went?
Well, it doesn't destroy Galactus, but Doctor Doom gets the Beyonder's powers.
Yeah, not yeah. Galactus. Beyonder's power.
Yeah,
but I thought he got Galactus's powers used as a stepping stone to get to the Beyonder.
No, he doesn't have to get Galactus's power. He's standing off in the side somewhere. I don't think they even show him again after issue one. Does he even make an appearance after that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like issue 5 or 6 when he tries to consume the planet.
Yeah, he's throughout the whole thing. Because that's the thing. That's part of one of the subplots is that both teams are worried about what Galactus is going to do, so they're all kind of keeping an eye on him. And then they find that in about issue number 4 where he's bringing his spaceship down. And they're like, oh, crap, you know, when he brings the spaceship down, that means that he's building up all of his power so that he can devour the planet. And so that's...
But if your whole argument is based on your spaceship, that's no big deal at all, right? Magneto just pushes it away. Or if you want, he calls it crashing down on Galactus's head. I don't know. You know?
Well, I mean, Galactus doesn't need the spaceship. That's just more of the machine that he constructs allows him to consume the planet more efficiently. He can consume a planet without the machine.
Right.
Then why doesn't he do it?
Because he just gets efficient.
He just got smacked down by the Beyonder.
There you go.
It's like eating spaghetti with your fingers. It's messy. The machine's like a giant fork.
It's a tool. Yeah.
See, this is what I'm saying.
But again, neither Hulk nor Magneto pack anywhere near the power of the Beyonder at all. So there's no, I mean, to mention the Beyonder is just, you know, he can't be the benchmark since he's the all-powerful guy that we weren't allowed to pick. The benchmark in this fight is Galactus, who is slapping the crap out of Magneto and the Hulk. Hell, he might just pee on him.
I don't think Galactus is the benchmark, though. I think Galactus is just like, you know, there's a couple of, you know, the mountain that Hulk holds up? Galactus is standing beside the mountain. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like part of the landscape. He's not fighting anyway.
Unless he gets attacked. And so in this, it is true, because that's what Ultron and Doctor Doom do. They go and attack him, and he slaps them both down. So...
No, see, this is what I'm saying. You've got Magneto and you've got Hulk, and this isn't the dumb Hulk. This is the smart Hulk, right? So basically what will happen is Magneto and Hulk will fight each other. They'll ignore Galactus because he's busy looking up at the sky for 12 issues.
All right.
And there's the fight. So they don't even go anywhere near Galactus. He just subdues himself. He's not even interested in fighting. He gives up. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not, He's not fighting anyone. He doesn't want to fight anybody on that world. He's like a pacifist.
No, he's not.
That's the best way to describe him.
If he was a pacifist, then he wouldn't have taken down Ultron and Doctor Doom. So if Hulk and Magneto, what they're going to actually do is they're going to say, oh my God, we're fighting Galactus. We need to team up. And then they're gonna go and fight Galactus, and Galactus is gonna say, "Oh my gosh, who are you? Get off me, you dirty little rat!" And he's gonna squash them, and he's gonna squash them quickly.
Like mosquitoes, they are. I mean, it's Galactus is
what. I'm glad that Tom made that reference, because when it comes to Ultron and when it comes to Doctor Doom, that Galactus didn't fight Ultron or Doctor Doom, right? Basically, it was like there was like these little annoying mosquitoes, and he moved them away. Because if he was fighting Ultron or if he was fighting Doctor Doom, he would have beat them up, right? Instead, what he did is he gave him a SWAT.
Ultron, all he had to do was drain his energy, right? Didn't he just drain him and just knock him aside?
Yes, actually, he did. He completely subdued Ultron, and Doctor Doom had to rebuild him, and then Ultron starts serving Doctor Doom.
I think the heroes are stupid, because they see that, hey, we just drain his energy. Why don't we just do what Galactus did the next time he attacks?
Exactly.
Put him down. But yeah, he didn't have to just pound on Ultron. He said, oh, I'll just drain your energy. And that's where all that deep thinking comes from. When you think he's just staring off in the space and counting stars and picking daisies, he's thinking. He's got 100 ways to beat everybody.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Anything else? Dan, you want to say anything else about old Hulk?
Oh, God. You're kind of quiet over
Hulk
there.
Smash.
Hulk smash. All right. Well, so this next week, this is good. All right. Next week, guests are being asked to draft one character featured on the cover of Avengers Initiative number 1. And the fight takes place on the Sahara Bridge, or is that Shahara Bridge in Yemen? I don't know much about that bridge, but
you gotta Google it, it's cool.
Is it? Cool.
I'll put it on Facebook. I'll put a picture on Facebook.
Alright. So y'all know Avengers Initiative number 1, all those heroes, the Initiative heroes, you got to pick one of those guys next week. So
hold on, is that the one with Iron Man like at the point and then everybody kind of just fans out?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's a lot of characters.
That's a lot to pick, choose from. But we also want to remind folks that if you want to vote on who you think would win between Magneto, Galactus, and Hulk, to do so by going over to the forums at comicattack.former.com and on the thread for this episode, and you can vote there. But before we sign off tonight, we thought it would be only fitting to ask everyone to pick one New Year's resolution that you would like to see happen in the world of comics. One New Year's resolution. If you could make one for the comics world or someone, some company, then what would be your resolution for them? Dan, do you want to go first?
Repeat the question.
Pick one New Year's resolution that you would like to see happen in the world of comics.
Okay. Actually, I'll let someone else go first.
Okay, I'll go first. My New Year's resolution for the comics world would be that Marvel and DC would start telling awesome stories, like really awesome stories, and do things that were crazy and do things that would piss people off and do things that would change the entire landscape of the comics industry and start really letting their creators create and play ball with the image stuff that's going on. So that would be my New Year's resolution for them. Speech, how about you?
Well, you kind of just stole mine. I just kind of wish like the big two would, take a few more risks, because it seems like the other retailers like Image and all of those guys are putting out stronger stories on a more consistent basis. So actually, yeah, if the big two would just give me stronger, consistent stories, yeah, and not try to wow me with the hype of the month, which is Superman kissing Wonder Woman. Ooh.
Yeah, like that hasn't happened before. hey, look at Action Comics 600. I'll go ahead and go next if you want me.
Yeah, go for it.
Given that there's this is another big comic book movie year with we have Iron Man 3, a new X-Men movie,
Thor,
Man of Steel, Thor 2, yeah. So with all that coming out, let's hope that they actually get it right with the movie tie-ins and actually, you know, put something out that's quality movie tie-in stuff. And that goes along with what you were saying, Jeff.
Yeah. All right. Dan, you got one now?
Hulk Smash. No, I mean, echoing what pretty much seems to be the running theme here is you know, they gotta stop with the big events and just give us good stories and try and, you know, take risks. Screw long-term fans who were like, no, you're ruining my childhood, you're raping my childhood. These characters have been around, in some cases, 40, 50, you know, 60 years. Exactly. So everything's already been written about them. Let's go somewhere they haven't been before. Like, let's just give good stories. That's all we need. We don't need big razzle dazzle, fancy schmancy, reinventing, and all new and different colors. I just.
I got a new outfit this month.
I got a new outfit. Yeah, Iron Man has a new outfit every week, and so does, you know, Batman. He puts one gadget on, and he has to have a whole new outfit. But yeah, that's it. Just, you know, change things without changing things. It's not that hard, people.
Your writer's right. Editors.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's why you hired them.
That's right.
Why you hired them.
Right. Exactly. All right, Ian, how about you, man?
One of the things that I'd like to see them do is separate the movies, all the big movies, and the books, which they are, but I think they're trying too hard to connect the books to the movies. I think that the revenue that you'll generate from the movies and the people that walk in and buy books based on the movies, that won't change based on what you put in the books. I don't know. Am I being clear? Like, I think you can still write any story you want, make it a really good story, and it doesn't matter that it doesn't relate to the movies. If people are coming in to buy those books based on the movies, they're going to buy the books. Like, it doesn't really matter. So instead of kind of punishing the readers, the longtime comic readers, by making the stories all based on these movies, keep the story separate. You know what I mean? Like, make your movies and make them, you know, however you want, and, you know, change the continuity and mess with it all you want. But then when it comes to the books, they're separate. They don't have to connect to these movies. And I think,
yeah, you have the movie continuity and then you have the book continuity. Yeah, what I was talking about was more in the way of actually tying the movies and comics together. But as you said, Not the necessarily mainstream books, but there have been movie tie-ins in the past that have been very good, very well done. And like, DC's doing that now with Smallville. They have Smallville Season 10 coming out right now. That has no relation to the general DC universe. In fact, I like Clark's costume better in the Smallville series than the new Superman costume, but it's just the minor changes to it. They can have the movie tie-in books, but they don't necessarily have to change Hawkeye's costume in the mainstream books to match the movie.
Yeah, like they're throwing out the baby with the bathwater here. They're forgetting the fact that the whole reason why they were able to get these sources to put in their movies is from these awesome stories. You know what I mean? And it's like they've completely forgotten that entirely. And what's going to end up happening is that they're gonna ruin their sources. They're gonna ruin the foundation that allowed them to build the movies the way that they are. Right. And instead, they should just keep plugging away with really wicked books. And then, you know, steal from them as you find fit. But other than that, don't touch them. You know what I mean? Like, don't, like, they're separate. It's not the same.
I agree.
Yeah, you'll go nuts if you try to tie X-Men First Class to the comic continuity. There's some glaring differences, but that's the point. It's a movie versus the comic, and you understand they're just drawing from the source material. They're not trying to remake the comic into a movie.
Right.
And they did a good job with First Class. So.
All right. So, thanks to all our guests, and thanks to all of our listeners for humoring us here at Contest of Champions by listening to our podcast. Feel free to tell us what you think of the show by following us on any of the social media platforms floating around out there. Follow us on Twitter at COC Podcast. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/COC Podcast. Join us on the Comic Attack forums by going to comicattack.former.com or comment on the post for this episode on comicattack.net. You can also check us out at comicrelated.com and their forums and their other forums as well. Or you can go the old-fashioned route and just email us at jeff@comicattack.net or capekiller@yahoo.ca.
We record every Sunday night at 9 p.m., and the show is available for download on iTunes the following Wednesday, and you can, or at least by the following Wednesday. You can leave us a review on iTunes, and we will give you a shout-out on the show, so please do that. So anyway, fun night. Special thanks goes all to all of our guests tonight who took the time out of their busy holiday schedule to be with us here on the show tonight. So thanks, guys. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Gid. Thank you, Tom. Always good to have you on the show.
Always good to be here.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Well, from myself, Father Jeff, and Cape Killer here at COC, we wish everyone all the best in 2013, and enjoy your parties, read lots of funny books, and see you next year, champions.
Hulk smash!
Let's get ready to run!